Good evening and welcome everybody to the Scrutiny, Audit and Value for Money Committee held today on Wednesday the 23rd of March 2022. I'd just like to welcome all of our external guests from Grant Thornton, CW Audit, as well as Trent and Dove for being here tonight. And also good evening to the councillors who have dialed in virtually. Just from a point of process again, as before, the members who are here virtually can ask questions and participate in the meeting, and we don't have a formal vote in any of the items. Just a slight amendment to the agenda. In the interest that we have got external guests here, we move item 11, which is the DFG presentation from Trent and Dove. We're going to move that to be after item 7, and then that basically means items 5 to what will then be item 8 and Trent and Dove will all be the external guests, and if they then wish, they can leave whilst we carry on with the rest of the meeting. So just in the interest of time, just kind of how we're so starting with the agenda, item 1, apologies for absence.
We have apologies from Councillor Sylvester and Councillor Hudson, and I think Councillor Hadley's on his way.
Thank you. Item 2, are there any declarations of interest from any councillors present? Perfect, thank you. Item 3, to approve the public minutes of the meeting held on the 9th of February 2022. As you have all received a copy of the minutes, are there any questions or comments on those? In which case, I'm happy to propose them. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Gould, all in favour of adopting the minutes? Yep. All against, all abstain, that would be unanimous, so happy to see they're carried. So moving on then to item 4, urgent business. We've not received any urgent business. So item 7 on the agenda is the external audit plan for the year ending the 31st of March. I'd like to welcome Andy Smith to give the presentation. Andy is taking over from Michael Green, who was the previous senior officer on the account. I'd just like to take this moment to thank him for his time and work on the account, and I'm sure you'll pass that on behalf of the committee. So with that, over to you, let's get the report.
Thank you, Chair. So just as a quick introduction, my name is Andy Smith. I'm the new liaison lead for the council. I'm director in the public sector audit team. Recently just moved into the Midlands team from the Northern team, which I've run for the last few years. You will probably notice that this is actually a progress report rather than the audit plan, as indicated on the agenda. The audit plan will actually come to the June meeting. Just in terms of progress, I want to kind of update on a couple of areas. One, just in terms of the grants work that we do, we certify the housing benefit subsidy that the council claims, and that work was completed and certified on the 28th of January with no major issues to report back to the committee. In terms of the actual external audit, the planning work has started. We've started to do our risk assessment work and started meetings with management. As part of that, we have made some of the planning decisions around that, but that work does continue. We'll obviously bring back the audit plan to say the June meeting. Just in terms of some of the kind of headlines that I want to talk about in terms of kind of planning decisions today, we have made decisions around what we believe will be the significant areas of audit risk. They remain the same really as prior years around the evaluation of London buildings, evaluation of perpetual liability. And then, of course, then there is the presumed risk that we always have to audit each year, which is around the risk of management override of control. In terms of materiality, we'll be auditing to similar levels as we've audited in previous years. So for the coming year, we're likely to audit to a materiality level that's just shy of £1 million. But we will be reporting any errors that we identify as part of the audit back to this committee at around £50,000. So any errors below that level, we won't necessarily report back to this committee unless we feel it's important to do so. The rest of this report is what is a document that we prepare as part of the risk assessment process, and this is basically a set of inquiries that we send to management across a number of areas such as fraud, compliance with laws and regulations, litigation and claims, that kind of thing. We've had the management responses back to the various inquiries in this document, which are presented in this report for the committee's information. All we ask for the committee to do is just to analyse if there's any issues or responses here that are inconsistent with your own knowledge of the council, whether you're actually content for the management response to be finalised and for us to take them on board. More than to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions from any councillors?
In terms of the message plan controls, are we satisfied with management responses and you'd like to see feedback from us? When's the timescale and deadline for that feedback received? Do you want it all tonight or can we contact you in the next few days?
If you haven't got an initial response, then you're happy for that to come back and can you confirm there's a June meeting if that's okay.
Are there any other questions from any councillors? Perfect. Thank you very much for that. So moving on then to item six. So this is the internal audit progress report, at which point I will hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just quickly preface that by saying, Mark sends his apologies for this evening. My name's Paul Capener, so I'm the Consortium Director for CW Wardies. So I'm here purely to support Ruby this evening, and my suspicion is she won't need any help at all, but if there are any questions that she can't answer, then hopefully I'll be able to.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take the report as read. I think it's a positive report. There are a number of audits that have been concluded in the run-up towards the end of the year. There are a few that are in progress. It's also pleasing to note that the recommendation tracking and independence of backup got has reduced significantly, so that's thanks to management updating the actions on the system, and there are only now a couple of outstanding actions that we will continue to liaise with management on. I'm happy to take questions on our progress today.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions on item six, the internal audit progress report for the council?
No.
Perfect. At which point then I will move on to item seven, which is the internal audit plan for 2022-2023. And hand over.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I'll take the internal audit plan as read. There are a couple of changes to make you aware of. Previously, we've always required you with an annual plan. We've tweaked this slightly, so you have now a three-year rolling plan, which just brings each sector into in line with our other clients. So while we've done this work in the background, the committee's not necessarily seen the work going on. So now you can see plan ahead for the next 3 years. It also helps us demonstrate greater compliance with the public sector internal audit standards than we had before for ESTAT. And there are more clear links between the corporate priorities and strategic risks facing the authority. And they've all been mapped as you read through the document. There is another change that we have based on the maturity of the authority and our coverage, reduced the plan slightly down and revised the number down. And that's based on the maturity of the organisation, the audits that we've done previously, building a history. So we thought it prudent at this point in time to do that now. I'm happy to take any questions on the internal audit plan, members.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councillor Locke.
So once I'm looking at the right document, we seem to have lots that have got nearly the same name. Page 9, the table of risks, CR7. ICT security. This one worried me a little bit. It looks to me like this is a copy-paste job. And what's more, it looks to me like it's been copy-pasted for a long time. If you take a look at the final line on the treatment column, prevention of access to unnecessary physical facilities, e.g. CD drives, USB ports. I think it would be hard pushed to find a computer that had a CD drive in the last 2 decades. That means that hasn't been written this year, and it hasn't been written in the last probably 10. Someone's been copy-pasting it without updating it. If you take a look at the second column, the description, there's confirmation of that. I would expect to find in today's age consideration of less traditional risks, such as social engineering through phishing attacks. But the only way you can really tie that to the description that's been given is through ICT security policy, which would be a very old-fashioned way to try and tie down user behaviour. I don't like this type of information being released to the public because I think it makes us look bad. I think it makes us look like we're copy-pasting without updating things. People will wonder what else in that table isn't up to date. I'm sure it's only an isolated point, but it would be nice if these were updated a little bit more often. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, this is based on ESTAT's own risk register and the information that we've taken from previous risk registers reports. So I'm happy to sort of liaise with management in terms of updates and reflect that in our internal audit plan going forward.
I might have a moment to consider for the ICT services review as well, Councillor Locke. Are there any other questions on the internal audit plan? No, perfect. So we do need to vote and approve the plan as outlined in the item. So I'm happy to propose that. Can I have a second, please? Councillor Gaskin. All those in favour to approve the internal audit plan 2022-23. All those against, and any abstentions. Okay. That is carried, so I'm pleased to say that the internal audit plan has been approved. Thank you. So now moving on to item 8, which is what would have been item 7, the Disabled Facilities Grant, with the presentation of the Clinton Door. So I'd like to welcome Jennifer Foster and her colleague, Jay. There is a presentation which we will get up on screen. So just to give some background to this, this has come from the internal audit, from the review of the FGs, with Trent and Doug being one of the external partners that helps facilitate those.
Thanks, Chair. I'll just wait a second to hand the mouse.
I'm glad that you are sharing the screen. I was a bit worried about how I was going to do that with lots of people. Sorry. Hi, so I'm Jen Lester. I'm Head of Supported Housing at Trent & Dove. So far this financial year, there have been 52 total live applications for DEFGs. 16 of those have been generated by Trent & Dove's own occupational therapists, and 36 have come from ESTAF's occupational therapy team. There have been 33 which have been granted, and 3 have been refused, which I'll talk a little bit more in the next slide. And there are currently 16 waiting, they're in application / refusal stage. So this year, like I said, seen 3 that have been refused. Just to explain that a little bit, Trent & Dove is a general needs housing provider, and we have a responsibility, obviously, to spend public money properly, look after our assets, and effectively manage the housing stock so it's future-proofing it for future customers, as well as and for the current tenants at the time, and looking kind of on a long-term basis to make sure that property is fit for purpose. So there have been three refusals this year, just for full transparency. One was because it was major structural change, and 2 were in family homes which were under-occupied. In spite of there being quite a few accepted this year, just to share with you all, I've been at Trent & Dove for 3 weeks now, and interrogating this a little bit, the process needs improving from our end. Lastly, there are huge delays at every stage of the process, as there will always be when it comes to properties. However, even before then, there are serious delays from when an application goes in, an RLT is picking that application up, assessing it, etc. That's something we're going to look into and do a full review. I think I missed the first one. Communication is really, really poor at every stage of the process. I think, for example, if we bring it life to it for those 3 refusals this year, I can't speak with assurance to say that they're actually communicated with really effectively from us to explain why that refusal is taking place or the next step. So we're looking into that. We're going to make sure that we not only communicate appropriately, but rather than just pointing in the direction over there, we actually have better options for people. Jake, who's my colleague here, he heads up the sustainment team that looks after this at Trent & Dove. He's relaunched the adaptations policy that makes it a little bit more flexible, but also it's back to the communications channel. It's really, really obvious for customers what adaptations can take place and where we may need to have a conversation about a different option for people. I think focus on sustainable tendencies and being really honest with customers around that to say, actually, is it best that we do this adaptation for you now, which is going to mean you're going to have to move in with a family member for 6 months whilst the property is adapted, and actually a year down the line, it might need adapted even more. So just have those honest conversations about having sustainable tenancies. One step further, what I would like to do coming into Trent & Dove is be a bit smarter around it. I don't actually think we have a list of our adapted stock, and I think that we should be identifying customers when they come in onto the housing register in the first place, and identifying who actually needs that adapted stock, so it's going to the person most in need. And then lastly, Trent & Dove does a lot of development, and it's doing a lot of development, so I think we need to be a bit smarter about making sure that we're meeting the local need, but also really, really relevant to customers. And where, for example, with these cases where we have had to say no, that data has been fed back to this part of our development plan. Happy to take any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you for that. Councillor Chavis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think the reason we requested to come to this committee is because we did a review of DFG 2019, then there's an update on last year. And one of the things that came back from the update that was done in November of last year is that there were some significant challenges in actually gaining landlord permission for Trent and Dove properties. To put that in context, I think we're looking at, from initial inquiry to the completion, we're looking at an average of over 300 days. That's nearly a year for somebody who actually needs this facility. That's quite a long time. So what I really want to understand is, and you talk about obviously poor communication and all that, but I still want to understand, why is it taking so long for Trent and Dove to grant landlord permission? And I think that's really important, bearing in mind that Trent and Dove is working quite closely with the Borough Council. And the second question I have is, how long does it take for Trent and Dove OT to do their assessment compared with ESVC OT, which is 17 days? And I may come back with some more questions after that, if that's okay.
Yeah, you have questions.
Bearing in mind, I've been at Trent and Dove for 3 weeks, but nevertheless, in answer to your first question, why is it taking so long? I've seen the time frame that it's taken over the last year, and it's completely unacceptable. In answer to your question, the second one, I don't know the comparison. I'd have to speak to colleagues at these staffs. I think all I can say here is that we need to look into the time frame. It shouldn't take that long at all. My understanding, looking at most recent cases, is that has been shortened quite considerably. But I think we need to put some best practice in, some acceptable timeframes. But because in answer to your question, no, it's not been good enough. So if you can add up the things, Jake, about how long it's taken.
I think originally there's been some internal changes with who the permissioners go to grant that permission. We've, since the new member of staff has started, we have improved the procedure that has increased, that's decreased the time it takes to get landlord's permission. So that should be happening in a more streamlined fashion. With regards to the delay with the OT, part of the workload that we've seen has increased dramatically over the last period, including people wanting to transfer, assessing those, making sure the properties are correct, making sure the applications are banded correctly. So that has led to a slight increase as well with the workload. So working to increase our provision where we need to, but also I think reviewing the policy to make it a bit more streamlined to ensure that people have got the backup and they'll understand where we are and what we're trying to do, which previously we didn't have. The previous policy was a little bit loose in places, which didn't necessarily give people the guidance they needed to make decisions in a timely manner.
Councillor Chadwick. Look, I sympathise with you. Obviously, we only recently came to the organisation, if you don't know, but look, you know, ultimately we are here to listen from Trent and Dove. And that, you know, the question still needs to be answered, and Trent and Dove have been ESCC, so strictly partner for a long while. So that really, I think, if you're not able to answer the question, I suggest you actually come back to us and give us the answers. But one of the things was that Trent and Dove were telling us that they didn't want adaptations for, I think, first floor and above. And that was that appeared to be the policy of Trent and Dove. So what you're saying here is something different. So can you confirm that was the policy, or has that policy not changed, more importantly, going forward? But also, I think so, what you are saying, we're going to do things better, I'm going to improve. It's about targets. It's about having smart targets. So what we're specifically seeking, and you'll see from our own reporting, from our own offices, it's all about the number of days. Because I think 300 plus days, you know, nearly a year to do the adaptation is simply not acceptable. So what we want to know is that, what is your time scale for granting the landlord permission? And what is their target? And similarly, what is their the target or OD assessment. It has to be in a number of days. I think we need to be specific.
If I can answer, I completely agree. And that was what I was touching on. I said that we need to implement acceptable timeframes where we both agree to that timeframe. I apologise. Representing Trenton Dove, that's just not in place at the moment. What was your first question? I think you asked another question as well.
The first question to answer about our adaptations to family homes really depends on the circumstances. If there's a disabled family that will make best use of those adaptations in the long term, then absolutely. We will also adapt that property. I think one of the issues we get is we've got a lot of single people who are massively occupying family homes. We have over 6,000 people on the waiting list. Large number of those are families, so we need to make sure that we have people in properties that meet their long-term housing needs. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the property that could be residing. So when we talk about making sure we have sustainable tenancies, that's part of that, is looking at what does this person need to live independently for as long as possible. And so it's working better and smarter with those to identify their housing need earlier and make sure matching them the correct time.
I'm just going to bring in some of the other councillors, but then I'll come back to you. So I've next got Councillor McGarry and then Councillor Griffin.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I'd like to thank Trenton Dove representatives for coming in today. You're extremely brave. I think DFGs has been an overdue topic to actually understand the reasons why residents are waiting so long for adaptations to be made. I've got a few questions. I would have loved to have had you separately in a subgroup where we could have focused more on this particular topic, but just a few questions for now. How long is your review going to take? And could you keep us in the loop with where you are at every stage? And, you know, basically let us know what your recommendations are coming forward. Secondly, how big is your current team with regard to looking at adaptations? Have you seen a larger staff turnover? And are your current staff on that team sufficiently trained to understand the needs of the residents, especially when they are special adaptations that need to be made to the properties? And how long are residents waiting for a decision in terms of your refusal, and how is this communicated at present to those residents? Are you giving them justified reasoning for that refusal? Thank you.
I'll take the first one, probably the second one. In terms of the review, it's going to be a big review. Actually, touching what you were saying about it would be good if we were chatting about this in more detail. I think this is bigger than just reacting to the fact that we need to improve the timescales. I think actually Trenton Dove as a landlord need to be looking at this wider than just DFGs. We need to be looking at our adaptations policy, as I said before, looking at our stock, which properties are actually adapted, and almost having them separate to the general needs stock, because they're not general needs properties, a lot of them. Because of that whole review is going to take some time, I would say 6 months, but in terms of the element of it, which is around the acceptable time frames, I'll be doing that in quarter one of the next financial year. So I'm happy to work on this and we're happy to report back on that, that's fine. The second question is probably more for you, Jake.
Yes, so in terms of the team that work on adaptations, we have one occupational therapist who is a trained, qualified and certified OT. So yes, she very much does understand the needs of the tenants and adaptations. Will hopefully resolve those needs. Secondly, we have our investment team who help deliver some of the adaptations. They're our technical experts in terms of the building and maintenance side of the business. So they're the ones that the request for landlord permission goes to. The gentleman involved is also from an adaptations background. His previous role, he was also delivering on those. So there is an understanding overall, but the team is relatively small in terms of the provision of adaptations. In regards to letting customers know before the refusal, at present, I don't think a robust reason is given. We are working with our colleagues at East Glasgow Councillors to develop a joint letter in which we'll be able to send to tenants once a refusal has been given, analyse some of the reasons why that is, but more importantly, what the next steps for those customers are. Be that we need to look at transfer or potentially look at reviewing care packages with our colleagues at the district, at the county council level, or be it certain aids that may be applicable to support them in the short term.
Okay, thank you for answering that for me.
Councillor Graham.
Can I thank you for your honest and open appraisal of the situation and laying on the table exactly what the issues are you've identified already at Trent Dove. I think one of the concerns the subgroup had was around some delays in the timescales as that council chair has referred to. And I'm grateful that you've come to me with an open book, I guess, about that. I think one of the concerns was that, as I think you referenced, at Trent Dove are a general housing provider. So one of the concerns, or you used a phrase here as that, I can't quite remember, one of the concerns was that you either might frown upon adaptations, or once an adaptation was applied to a house and then the tenant moved out, you'd look to remove the adaptation to open up the housing stock to a wider market, the wider market being a family offering of two parents, a child or three in a family, and that isn't really suited to houses that have been adapted for people with disability needs. So the fear was that they were not being returned and put in, or you wouldn't look to put them in the first place because it shrunk the market that you're offering houses to. So I'm delighted as well that you suggested that as part of the review, it's not just about time scales, it's about looking at your housing stock, looking at what's been adapted, and looking, I guess, at an allocations policy that would revolve around that. So I'm pleased about that. Maybe once I finish speaking, maybe you could expand a bit more on what I mentioned about some of the concerns are about the housing stock that's been adapted and whether or not that will start. In terms of the review that you've suggested will take 6 months, hopefully you'll be looking to get some input from partners, so through Rachel and the team there, will they be able to input to the review that you're doing and some of the concerns that have been identified from the scrutiny, not just the scrutiny, I guess, but the scrutiny committee here, but also some of the concerns that our team have got at ESBC with how disabled facilities grants are applied and how this stock is adapted for that. I think we've got some valuable input from the team there. Also, on a specific point, I don't know if other councillors have had, but I certainly have had an email from a resident with a specific question about motor neuron disease and about how housing stock are adapted for motor neuron disease. And as we've got it in teaming, I thought I'd just raise that. And if you deal with that specifically, if you've got concerns or issues around that and how you treat MND adaptations for an housing stock that you've got, that's about it. I mean, it depends.
I may have to come back to you. In answer to your first question, which I think is largely around do we frown upon DFGs, and explain a little bit more around that. I think something to add about this is that this is not the only route that we adapt properties at Trent and Dove. So we have a budget and for transparency of 100,000 where we do minor adaptations to properties. And the process is much faster with that because it's much smaller adaptations, but that is spent. I think we checked yesterday, so about 55 this year, 60 that's been done. It's a reasonable number, and by and large they're approved. So I think it's worthwhile saying that. In terms of this, no, we don't frown upon them. That's why there's thing 33 that have been done this year. That said, I think bear in mind that we're spending public money, we're there for the community. We need to protect our stock and also, work with 6,000 people that are housed at Trent and Dove and the 6,000 people on the register. I think we have to be smart around adapting properties. Part of it will be, is this the right way to go financially? Is this the right thing to do, adapt a family home? And actually, we've got 6 families on the register who have all got double the amount of kids of bedrooms in GCSE age that cramped into a family home, and they're absolutely desperate for that family home down the road when there's one person living it. We have to be realistic about that. But also from a risk point of view, as a property developer, when you build a property, You build it based on the spec of what you need, and our properties are general lead stock, so they've all been built like that. So when you come in and you adapt a property, you're adapting it for that single need, and obviously this should be a risk assessment. But often what has happened previously, and this is me looking into it a lot over the last 3 weeks, is you're getting properties that haven't been designed to have chairlifts put in them. I think, you know, the best case the client dug was when it was just a yes, absolutely. We had a chairlift going around the edge of the outside of a house that you had to build an enclosed bit. And sometimes it's just not right for the property. Then there's risk there as well. I'm sure you're all aware of the child that got unfortunately lost their life because the head got stuck in a chairlift because it had been put in. You know, you have to think as a sensible landlord. But that said, we've done 33 this year. We're not anti-DFGs at all. We just need to be sensible, and there's lots of different things to consider with regard to that. And I know that's really, really difficult when you've got Smiths who will live, you know, in your area. But, you know, we're not a horrible landlord that just says no at all. Hopefully you can see that from the number that we're doing. It's just really complicated and complex. Happy to answer more questions on that, obviously. Yeah, you go ahead.
I think one of the other things we wanted to try and do better as well is having a register of our disabled adaptive properties. So when properties are looking out to read adaptations in, it's looking at them. What needs can they solve for people that perhaps require a level of adaptations that appropriately match people against those, which something we do try and do at the moment. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't, that doesn't always happen, and the adaptations are removed. Sometimes they're going to need to be removed depending on the lifespan and service frequency and all sorts, but that is something we want to do. So we will have an adaptive stock. It will be a small proportion of our stock. Primarily, disabled people are a small proportion of society, so we still will always need to maintain a level of disabled adaptation. So we're definitely not anti them, it's just doing it in the right capacity, making sure that if we are having an adaptive stock, it is meeting the needs of the people that we serve.
And your last question, apologies if I've missed another one out, you can ask me again, obviously, about input from partners. I think I want, coming in as a newbie, I want the review to be thorough, because actually I think that we're missing a trick here. I think actually we're not serving the best needs of the population when, for starters, we don't have a list of the adapted stock. Will other partners be involved? I mean, will throughout it, we'll be working with our partners in Staffordshire. That goes without saying, but fundamentally, we're talking here about adaptive properties for disabled customers. That's not our bread and butter. Our bread and butter is general needs. So, of course, we will be. We couldn't possibly be doing that alone. The small bit of the review around the delays, I'll be doing that myself, because we need to get that sorted as soon as possible. But the larger scale, how we're going to actually future-proof this and make it work for customers better, of course, that will be with lots and lots of partners, I hope.
Can I just, on the MND one, perhaps if I share the email I've received, you could bring in your response to that, Barry.
Yes, of course, yes.
Councillor Chadwick, did you want to...
I think you mentioned that obviously your core services is for general needs rather than the kind of disabled. That client type, you might want a better word, but the thing is, I think it's the people in general kind of needs who then become kind of, you know, circumstances change, and then that's the other people who actually need the kind of adaptations or whatever, you know, people develop disabilities as, you know, during their kind of lifespan as they get old, I guess. And I think, obviously, if people are living in turn into a property, they'd rather have adaptations where they are living rather than having to be rehoused into a different property. But that's something to consider as well when you're looking at your policy. But I think in terms of the time scales, you know, when are you hoping to have this new policy and how would that be implemented? And also I think there's, as you mentioned, our own kind of PSPC officers and support. And is there anything that that we as a council, we can do to improve or help you to actually develop that policy sooner, or actually help you to make those kind of decisions sooner.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first bit of the question there. Please can you repeat it?
So when you do the review, then you're going to come up with some kind of a new policy around sort of DFG adaptation of the properties. How would that be? How long would it take, and how would you actually implement that? And then the second part is, how can we as a council help?
Yes, thank you. I think similar to Councillor McGarry's question earlier about the timeframes, so I said that it's not a new policy. It's not a new policy just to write and file away. It's a whole new approach. It's a whole new way of working, and almost an operational approach. So again, that will be over 6 months period in reference to the delays themselves. So that part of the review, that will be done immediately. So that will be done in quarter one of next financial year. So from April 1. In terms of support from yourselves, thank you for the offer, and I'll come back to you if that's okay. But as I mentioned a second ago, we won't be doing this alone at all. We need as much involvement from local partners and yourselves as possible to make sure it's right. So yeah, I'll appreciate that, and thank you.
Councillor McGarry.
Thank you, Chair. And through yourself, Chair, obviously just listening once again about the time frame on the review, might I ask that Trent and Dove come back in 6 months' time with their recommendations and what changes they've made to try and improve the service, if they could possibly come back sort of back end of the summer, perhaps, at the next audit committee?
Yeah, but I'm trying to be happy with that. I think that's a sensible suggestion. I think given the direction of the debate here, what it sounds like would be useful is that the subgroup, the FG subgroup, pick up any of the more detailed technical questions directly with Trent and Dove. I think Councillor Chowdhury has as well, in terms of just timescales and things like that. If the subgroup then wanted to conclude their report ahead of the next scrutiny here, with one of those recommendations as well, I think logically being that Trent and Doug are invited back. And then what I think it would also be useful from our side, if the subgroup are happy, is that once that review has been completed from our side, that we also then look to share that with Trent and Doug to feedback in our thoughts and concerns on the process as a whole.
I totally agree with you on that, Chair. And obviously the rest of the committee will want to know everything that's been happening with Trent and Doug as well. So yeah, definitely.
Are there any other questions from any councillors? Yes, Councillor Beach.
I have a handful of nitty-gritty questions, but if you want me to send them in an email and hold them for later. This is purely for an understanding point of view for me, hopefully for everybody else. You mentioned you have a budget for minor adaptations. What would you classify as a minor adaptation? You mentioned a stair lift. Chair
list
for the stairs. Is there anything else that
you'd include in that? Yes, yeah, so as part of that budget, with our investment team looking at our stock, we do fit overbath showers and we do fit level access showers. So that is the primary focus of that budget. We also do fund things like grab rails, extra security lights, painting, things like front steps bright yellow so people with visual impairments can see them a bit easier in that kind of work.
Brilliant. Do you want me to ask them all in one go? And you can just pick and choose who wants to switch.
Your best.
Okay. we were speaking about OTs. Obviously, OCC has got OTs of their own, you've got your own OTs. Is there a criteria which dictates, or a process from start to finish that dictates which applications end up with your OTs versus our OTs? Do we only get the ones that aren't Trent and Dove Housing to assess, or do we get some and we pass them on? how does that process work? And in terms of your OT, how many hours a week or days a week is allocated of their job to DFG assessment? I assume they have other duties and responsibilities, or perhaps work as part of an NHS team. Could the workload between the ESBC OTs and your OTs in the short term be collaborated upon to reduce that time scale for you while you're obviously doing a lot of operational work and reviews? Would that be possible by any help? And then my other question was in regards to under-occupied properties and how the process works, but I will email that over to Omran.
On DFGs, so the DFG applications don't have to come from Trenton Dove, the Trenton Dove properties. A lot of them come from paediatric OTs if they're working with a family, from social care and all sorts of places. So our OT will work with our internal customers. We get a ring up and say they're struggling with the back, for example. She will identify that and go out and do an assessment. Perhaps it's identified that a level access shower is needed. It's in a bungalow, it's suitable to be adapted, and she will do the DFG application and send it through to our colleagues at East Strasbourg Council. Sometimes, depending on the type of adaptation, if the nominal life of the bathroom is coming up to the end of its life and we're due to replace it anyway, we may replace it with a level access shower. So there are several routes, but it's not always that Trenton Dove properties, DFGs, have to come from Trenton Dove. They could come from a number of places. With regards to how many days, so ROT, she works for 4 days at the moment. It's a working pattern. About 75% of that time is spent doing assessments for adaptations. Now, they're not all DFGs. Some of those will be done on internal route. I don't have the exact splits of how many she would do down either route, but it's about 75% of her working time. And what was your, was there another question?
I'm speaking on behalf of officers. I'm basically asking whether, in the interim, while you guys are obviously doing a lot of other work, whether ROTs that are there to do GFGs could support with caseload management. Could that be a conversation that's initiated following this meeting?
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation to be had. I'm conscious of overloading and workloads, but it's the resource there, and yeah, we can actually have that conversation.
Are there any other questions from councillors? I have two questions. One for yourself. So you mentioned throughout the presentation and a few of the answers that you'd always look to the long-term benefit of the adaptations of the properties. What would you consider to be long-term? And then the second question, possibly for the ESBC officers, in terms of DFGs overall, what percentage of them are Trenton Dove specific and what percentage of them are kind of just general applications?
Yeah, I think when I say long term, it's a property. So, you know, bear in mind that most Trenton Dove tenants come for life. So we're looking very long term, that we need to make sure that that property isn't adapted beyond use for a future family or a future individual who's living there. But I think more when I'm talking about sustainable tenancies, it's for the actually for the individual. Because more often than not, we're not perhaps talking about applications from younger, from people with children, but if it's an older resident that today needs level access because of a wheelchair, and that project takes 6 months to implement, actually for that customer, their health might deteriorate, and then 6 months later, they need something else adapted, and they need something else adapted. So we'll try and be holistic around it and say, actually, is this the right thing for this person? And that kind of goes back to the review. Honestly, how sophisticated we look at that, I can't answer that. But that is part of the process. What we want to get to is where we're looking at and going, actually, is best for you. And we're having this conversation with customers and saying, are you aware of some sheltered housing we have, etc., that maybe you need better, etc. That's more what I'm getting at.
Yes, in terms of DFGs, that are completed, it's pretty much a 50% split. So 50% will be housing association. It's not just Trenton Dove are the majority, so probably slightly less than 50%. And then we've got Sanctuary Housing, Midland Heart, Chris's housing group as well, which are a relatively low proportion.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from any councillors? In which case then, thank you for coming in. I think thank you for being quite honest and open in terms of the presentation and answering the questions. I think it sounds like we've got a good way forward with the subgroup to take that forward. So yeah, thank you for your time. If any of the external guests would like to leave at this point, feel free. So back onto the agenda then. So we're now on to what will be item 8. So the revenue and capital counter, which point are going to be.
Thank you, Chair. So this report is the board's free forecast position for the current financial year, covering revenue, capital budgets, treasury management activities, as well as a summary of the key strategic risk facing the authority. We start at section 4, which covers the revenue budget. Members will recall that the budget for the current year was balanced, taking into account 1.1 million from reserves. This included a corporate health provision of 1.3 million against estimated COVID-19 pressures, recognising that at the time there was a high degree of uncertainty in this regard. The report highlights that overall there remains some significant forecast net pressures. The pre-COVID-19 service budget. However, after taking into account those corporate budgets, including the COVID-19 provision, this results in an overall forecast which would only require a minimal drawdown from reserves of 15,000. Overall, therefore, the forecast outlook for the year is better than anticipated when the budget was set, and this is largely due to the success of the vaccine rollout in terms of reopening the economy and preventing further restrictions and lockdowns. The previous quarter, of course, the Omicron variant seemed like it would pose a significant threat. That was not materialised as we previously seen, and the most significant changes since the overall forecast at quarter two relate to a continued uplift in income from recycling, a reassessment of the supported housing provision, and a forecast reduction in environmental health expenditure. The narrative in respect of the most significant variations is shown at paragraphs 4.2 and 4.3 in a normal manner, bearing in mind the budget provision for COVID pressures is held corporately and reported at paragraph 4.3. As usual, there is a full schedule of variances attached to Appendix 8 of the report. And Section 5 covers treasury management and sets out that at the end of December, our investment stood at 66.1 million, although it was expected to significantly fall in the final quarter in the usual manner. The rate of return has reflected availability in the market, but as the VAT rate has now seen a number of increases, this will be reflected in the quarter four report. A full schedule at the end of the investments at the end of the quarter is attached to Appendix C in the usual manner. and external borrowing remains at 11 million. Overall, treasury management activities have been in line with the approved treasury management strategy. And in relation to the capital programme, this is then set out at section 6, and the report sets out expenditure against approved programme of 9.5 million, with all projects on target to be delivered within budget. Paragraph 6.2 outlines capital receipts, and slightly in excess of 216,000, which have been received at the end of quarter 3 here. And finally, section 8 covers risk management, and appendix D. The report is the schedule of the most significant corporate strategic risk based in the authority, together with the measures taken to manage each risk. Covers the key points in the report, and the recommendations sent out to section 12 were approved by the cabinet. Happy to take any questions through you, Chair.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions from any councillors? Perfect. We'll move on to item 9. So this is the corporate performance report for quarter 3.
Thanks, Chair. So as you say, so the corporate plan performance report connects our progress towards achieving objectives of the council up to the end of the third quarter of this financial year. So in the normal way, I'll just provide a very quick summary of the headline figures and the key points. But as you can see from the report, the numbers suggest that overall the corporate performance again continues to be very positive. So just to quickly summarise, the analysis shows that out of the 129 targets that we have in total across the whole corporate plan, there are 112 that have been marked as green, just one has been highlighted as amber, and just 9 that have been highlighted as red. There are 5 that are not yet due to be reported on, and they of course become live at year end, and there's 2 that have been previously agreed for deferral. So overall, then, looking at the 122 live targets, that equates to the council being at 91.8% green overall, and just 0.82% amber, and just 7.38% red. Looking specifically at the value for money corporate priority, which is, of course, by this committee, the numbers are very similar and similarly positive at 92% green. There's none amber under this priority, just 6 targets or 8% as red. And those few targets that I referred to that have been highlighted as red are detailed in the following section 5.5, which you see from page 8 of the report, and that provides some context around each of those indicators. And a couple of indicators that have been updated show in section 5.6 of the report as well. As always, all the full details, including appendix 1, the benchmarking chain appendix 2 as well. But as I say, overall, I'm going to suggest that the council continues to be in a very good position in terms of performance. That's my job to tell us on track to be achieved or have been achieved to plan. With that, I'll hand back to you.
Thank you. Are there any comments and questions from councillors? Perfect. Moving on then to item 10. So, scrutiny review progress update. I will again hand over to James, who will give a brief overview.
Okay, so 4 reviews really live, one being the DFG review, which we've obviously just spoken about, and we've got a plan of action to take that forward from here. We have the review of ICT in progress as well. There's been some results allocated to that in terms of the research officer to support the subgroup. There's a meeting by the subgroup next week, I believe. Some initial data gathering has taken place with the ICT manager to be able to start to take that forward and respond from next week. We have the review of the mayoralty. So in terms of that, we've had some additional data dropped into a working report which has been circulated today to the subgroup. The next step is to agree the questions for a survey to go out to all members to canvass opinion on the mayoralty service to be able to finalise that piece of work as well. And the final review is the review of waste management, which we've aligned with the other committee, the scrutiny committee. Councillor Wyman is the chair of the other committee, took that forward to informal meetings this week, and I'll pass back to you, Chair, to provide an update on that specifically.
Thank you, James. So in regards to the waste management review, we had discussions this week, and that is going to be brought back to the committee to revisit, one, to update some of the data in there, but also to refine some of the recommendations that went forward. So, for example, one of the recommendations, the first recommendation in there proposed initiating a review, where upon reflection, I think the data and the data is there within the report and conclusions from that can be drawn. So as part of that, the subgroup is Councillor Sylvester and Councillor Hudson. I am going to put myself on that subgroup as well to help support them. And then the hope is that we will be able to bring that back at the next scrutiny meeting here for consideration of the revised and updated report. Happy to take any questions, comments on that, or is there any other councillors who wish to take part in that? The only other update then that I would like to say in regards to the mayoralty review, I also believe that is in a position where we can quite quickly wrap that one up and bring some recommendations forward. So I would encourage the members of that subgroup, myself included, to bring forward that information, particularly because I think some of it has been discussed at previous meetings in regards to some of the proposals, such as the council amendment as well. So I think we are in a position where we can bring that all back to the next scrutiny committee to conclude as well. Combined with the DFG review means that, from my perspective, that our next meeting, we should be in a position to conclude, I'm going to be ambitious and say, to conclude two reports, to potentially conclude the third in the waste review, and then to see an initial update from the IT one, which I think will probably be quite a comprehensive piece of work. So are there any comments or questions on that from councillors? Okay. Perfect. Onto the agenda, so we've covered item 11. So item 12 is the outside organisations update. But if there's anything you want to add to that.
No, just to say that the forms regarding outside organisations that have been received attached with the agenda, they're there for information, really. We'll have to take any questions.
Any questions on that item? No? Perfect. Moving on then, so item 13, public executive decision records. We only have the one under consideration. Are there any questions or comments you would like to raise in regards to that one? No? Perfect. Moving on to item 14, so we haven't received any questions. Item 15 is the date of the next meeting. So the date of the next meeting is currently to be announced. That is due to the structural changes of the committees going forward, because audit and value for money are now being separated in terms of that scrutiny function. There's just some rejig in terms of the council calendar. So as soon as we know more on those, we'll let all members know. At which point, I will therefore move that we go into private. So in accordance with section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, that the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in the view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before each item on the agenda. Whew. Okay, so at which point then,